Hey, podcast listeners, this is Pedro Falchi coming to you from Boston University and the Howard Thurman Center for Common Ground. Today, I caught up with Ken Elmore, Associate Provost and Dean of Students, Eric Jarvis, Program Manager for the BU Hub, and Grace Ferguson, a freshman from Salt Lake City studying broadcast journalism. And for the next 40 minutes, we talked about the BU Hub, BU's first ever general education curriculum. We hope you enjoy the conversation. Dean Elmore, Eric, Grace, thank you so much for being here today. So the BU Hub has been alive and well for 4 months at the time of this recording. But let's go back to its origins. Why did the institution decide to revamp general education?
Well, I think that what we did here at the university, and this is Ken, we didn't have to revamp general education. We had to have general education at Boston University. The way we were wandering in the woods with every school and college, and we've got 16 of them that was out there. They were creating their own general ed requirements and programs. So for example, our College of Engineering would have a certain set of classes and things that they thought were appropriate for an engineer. Our students in Arts and Sciences had a different general ed program. We even had specific programs around general education that would fall into maybe core curriculum and other items like that. And so what we actually did was to think about implementing, and ultimately we did, implement the first general education program university-wide for undergraduates at Boston University. And I think that grew out of a lot of the big conversations happening in higher education and in the world, and that is, what kind of graduates do we want to put out into the world? Do we want people out in the world who can just work and be widgets? Or do we want to put people into the world who can be leaders? Do we want people in the world who are to be good human beings and really understand the timeless questions that are out there about being a human being and how that fits into work and economies? And so our faculty got together over time, and this is a project that took about 4 years to develop, and the faculty got together as part of a steering committee, and they started asking questions. They went around, they had listening sessions, and they started to ask, what are the kind of students we want to put out into the world? And what does that mean in terms of how we educate them? And I love that they came up with notions of intrepidness, worldwise as being a part of it too. Really good, broad sorts of things that I think anyone from business to the poets would say, that is exactly the kind of person we want in our society right now.
Yeah, you know, and I would just add too, you know, that, I mean, when, you know, just to build on what Ken was saying, that, you know, there's the idea on the one hand that we want to create these students who are well-rounded and touch all of these different areas of knowledge and kind of ways of thinking, so that they have those experiences regardless of the school or college that they're in. Mm-hmm. But there's also a way in which they're being prepared for just a different kind of world. And we actually use that language a lot. You know, we have this sort of rapidly changing, interconnected world. And there's the, I think there's the sense that we had to provide students with preparation for entering into their lives that are going to be constantly in flux, their work lives, their personal lives, their civic lives. And so, you know, I think that was part of what helped, and I came in a little later, but so this is sort of my understanding of things, that this is part of what helped develop this vision of wanting to create these capacities in students, you know, to develop certain kinds of capacities, to not focus on courses specifically, mm-hmm. but to ensure that all students. So even the College of Fine Arts student has to touch the diversity, civic engagement, and global citizenship capacity, or the engineering student has to make sure that they have that they touch the philosophical, aesthetic, and historical interpretation capacity. So it's making sure that all students sort of touch all of these areas.
And what I also love about the Hub and the thinking that the faculty had about it, it boils down to this one really wonderful thing: habits of mind as being this important piece. And habits of mind are the kind of thing that will last you a lifetime. It's about how you conceive of yourself and how you put knowledge together and how you take that knowledge, take those building blocks of things that you might know about, you know, diversity, civic engagement, global citizenship, aesthetics, analytical reasoning, and have enough of a framework for yourself to problem solve or to create.
Mm-hmm. And I would just to add on to that, I would say not only to have those sort of habits of mind at your command, but to be able to go into rooms with other people who are drawing upon different disciplines and backgrounds and being able to understand where they're coming from. And so that, you know, these students are not just, you're not just coming out of BU with a sort of particular major from a particular school, but you're coming out with a set of skills and tools that are hopefully going to support you throughout your life.
So as both of you know, there is a national conversation about the value proposition of attending college, a four-year traditional college institution. And the debate tends to be around cost, return on investment, will a graduate get a job?
Mm-hmm.
So this sounds wonderful with trying to create a cultured, learned person. How do you respond to the people who are also looking for that, not guarantee, but assurance that they will graduate with the high probability of getting a job?
Well, I think that you are right. There is that conversation about this, about the economic value of higher education. And we seem to think about that almost exclusively. I sometimes feel as though folks like me have just conceded that this is only about the economic proposition. We look at it as a consumer proposition. And I think that what we've also got to do, and so many of our problems, I think, stem from just having that one mindset, consumer. We also have to have the mindset that deals with citizenship, membership in a community, as also being an important component of who you are. It's not always about convenience, but it is sometimes about stopping and thinking a little harder about some things. So I'd say for that person who might be in the space where they've got a prospect because they're in a professional track, journalism, business, communications in general, advertising, engineering, hospitality, you're going to be so much better at what you do as a professional when you know something about art. You're going to be so much better as a communications official, communication specialist, when you're able to think about the world on a real deep and rich level. You are going to be a better engineer when you can communicate to people about what it is you're doing, and you got to deal with people who are clients and others. And you're just going to be a better neighbor and a friend when you know something about human condition, human beings, and you're in the know. You know, I almost look at the hub as being about saying to someone, you want to be cool? You want to be somebody at a dinner party? You want to be somebody hanging out at the pub or the bar who's interesting, that people want to hang out with? And you got to, first off, know a lot of things, little about a lot of things, but you've got to be able to put that together and say, wow, that reminds me of this. Or, oh yeah, as you know, there's this there are these common sets of things that human beings have thought about over time. I could talk about that too and give you my take. So the hub is about being cool, if you ask me.
I couldn't have said it better myself. But you know, and I want to add something to that, because I think that, you know, Dean Elmore is focusing on all the sort of benefits of these ways of thinking, that the value that they can add to your life and the ways that he just described. And what I want to also suggest for, let's say, the cynic who might say, that's all fine and well and good, but how is this going to help me get a job? Mm-hmm. And I think the hub's answer to that is that, and it's not just the hub, it's Boston University and its colleges across the country, that there are a lot of opportunities for experiential learning in the hub. And hub co-curriculars, which I know we'll get to eventually, are one example of that. And there are others. There's the Cross College Challenge, which is a project-based course that provides students with an opportunity to work with clients or on projects, you know, in a hands-on way. And so I think that it's been top of mind for BU administrators and faculty in the development of the hub, and in incorporating these two aspects of the hub mm-hmm. co-curriculars and the Cross College Challenge, that really provide opportunities for students to engage with kind of hands-on learning outside of the classroom in non-traditional ways. And so the idea is that not only are they developing kind of these specific capacities, but they're also gaining some real world experience that they can then draw upon, whether it's as they graduate, they have an experience outside of the classroom that they can refer to and say, I actually learned about this here, you know, when I was working on this Hub co-curricular podcast with Pedro or whoever. And so I think that that's something that we're trying to sort of raise the profile of at the Hub, because it's an important part of it. It's not just a curriculum that's rooted in courses, although that's a very important part of it and represents a large part of the curriculum, but that's actually, that has been threaded kind of through the curriculum throughout. And so,
Eric, if I may, there's a couple terms associated with the Hub that I think we need to define.
Okay.
For our listeners, and Grace, this would actually be a really wonderful opportunity for you to talk about your understanding of the Hub, too.
Absolutely.
Eric, can you talk about the difference between capacities, areas, and Hub units? What do those three terms actually mean?
I can talk about them. I talk about them a lot, and I think what you just described, those three terms, in essence, reflect kind of the core structure of the Hub. And so, you know, we've been talking about these ways of thinking, these bigger areas, these capacities. And so within each of these capacities are what we call distinctive areas or Hub areas. And so within, for example, diversity, civic engagement, and global citizenship, that's a capacity. Within that, there is an area known as ethical reasoning that carries one Hub unit. And so the areas themselves are the requirements that students have to fulfill. And a student might take, for example, 10 to 12 courses and fulfill a total of 26 units, which is what the curriculum requires. But so you can think of it as kind of moving kind of from a broader perspective to an increasingly more focused perspective. And so you have the capacities and you have the areas that are kind of a specific focus within that capacity. And then each area has its own learning outcomes. And so if a Hub course carries a unit in a particular area, it has to fulfill the learning outcomes for that area. Now units, that's just a term that basically describes how you earn or fulfill a particular requirement. And we actually opted not to use credits so as not to confuse that with the credit system, but also because these are courses and offerings that are going to be offered between different schools and colleges, that we have co-curricular experiences and other opportunities that are also going to have to carry the ability to fulfill a requirement, but that won't necessarily carry credits. And so for that reason, we created this different currency, Hub units. And so that means that a course could be a four-credit course that is fulfilling, you know, a requirement in a particular major, and that also carries two Hub areas, or carries, two units in two different Hub areas. Does that make sense to you?
That does make sense. I do want to note that the Hub it comes across as very complicated to a student who, as they enter their college education, they might be expecting more of a pathway. So I was wondering how you might respond to a student who might be a little daunted by the Hub and sort of is confused just by looking at this graph that you have of it.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, I think that, the Hub is doing something I think really important here. It's saying you've got a brain and you have got some choice and you get to make a bit of a pathway for yourself. I think about the capacities as being the six areas that when we think about what we want a BU undergraduate to be when they leave here, they're the six big areas, capacities. We want you to have the capacity to consider philosophical, aesthetic, and historical interpretation, the capacity to do inquiry that's both scientific and social, the capacity to deal with diversity and global engagement and civic engagement in your life, etc. So big sort of thing. And we're saying you got to hit all these. You will through your classes while you're here, but we want to be real specific and focused and say, look at the different ways, these different areas that are here. how you meet those particular big baskets that are there. And even more, we give you some choice about how you do it. You can do it through some co-curriculars, those hands-ons. You can do it through classroom experiences. And then ultimately, you'll do it by getting together in teams with other people. So I think that what I'd say to someone new and experiencing this, take some time and think about the kinds of the kind of pathway that really suits you for meeting this, because you got some really good choice here on these kinds of things. This should be fun. This should be exciting, even to the engineer. Even to engineers.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, part of what Dean Elmore is tapping into, and it's one of the things that the Hub is really designed to encourage, is for students to explore and to be to think about, oh, well, I can earn this particular area through this course, you know, which I might not normally have done. And in fact, one of the things that the Hub does is it encourages students to take courses at you know, different schools and colleges, you know, across the university. So it's, you know, I think it's really important to emphasize that we want students to feel a sense of like exploration.
Right.
On the other hand, I would also say that to the student who's worried, let's say, about how do I sort of fulfill all of these requirements, just to know that there's also, they're going to have a lot of support if they need it in thinking through how this will work. Mm-hmm. And so advisors across the schools and colleges are working with the Hub and developing resources and means through which to advise students thoughtfully on the Hub. It does mean too, you know, I think, and again, this gets back to what Dean Elmore was saying, that students will have to be thoughtful and intentional in some ways about, and depending upon the school or college you're in, you might have a little more or less choice, depending upon, you know, or even kind of depending upon your major path. So I think those are all elements, but I would try to adopt the perspective of, you know, that you have this opportunity to experience all of these different sort of kinds of learning, and you're also going to have all the resources that you need to make sure that you get there.
Mm-hmm. And you know, something I throw in there as well, and maybe this gets back a little bit to some conversation we had earlier. You know, there are all kinds of studies or surveys and polls that people have done of employers and also of graduate schools. And time and time again, people say this is exactly the kind of learning that we want the people who we bring fresh into our environments to be able to exhibit overall. So because you go out into a world where you are going to have a lot of choice, and you go out into a world where, yeah, there'll be some structure about how you work or how you do school, but it starts to be something where you've got to be a bit more thoughtful with some good advice, of course, but you've got to be real thoughtful about it. So this people like to say we're not in the real world. I say, nah, this is real world learning right here. This really is.
Dean Elmore, one of the terms you and Eric have said a few times is co-curricular. And from my understanding, this is in many ways a radical culture change at our institution, because you're talking about taking what was traditionally the extracurricular activity, the choice that the student made in a student organization, a club, service learning, study abroad, you name it, and this is actually becoming part of the BU Hub curriculum. So can you talk about what this evolution has been like? I know that you chaired the co-curricular subcommittee. How did we go about making the extracurricular co-curricular?
Well, I'll start by saying I've got to give incredible thanks to our faculty, much gratitude that they had the foresight to say that learning, well, first off, that this is a total student experience. This is not about in the classroom, outside the classroom. No. It's about the total student experience. And our faculty recognize that the total student experience means that learning does happen outside of a thing we call a classroom. It's extending this notion of what a classroom is overall. So big ups to our faculty for thinking that way. And I think on a real basic level, when I heard our Associate Provost for Undergrad Affairs education say this once. She says, well, look, Beth Loiseau, she said, you know, we're really trying to make extracurriculars purposeful and to meet, of course, the same requirements that we've got here for outcomes that we have laid out so that they fit into this prescription that we have for the hub capacities. But the co-curricular, you know, the development of the co-curriculars, we got together with a faculty committee, primarily a faculty committee, and we wanted to make sure that we could define what we thought an extracurricular was, define what we thought a co-curricular was. And it's hard because we throw these words around a lot of times in higher education, and we think we mean the same thing. Well, we decided, well, we've got to really talk about what it is that we're talking about in terms of defining the co-curricular. And I think a big part of defining the co-curricular is to make sure that it's hands-on, to make sure that it's got a level of supervision from someone who has a notion of what's happening, and also that it's not just about this passive way that you will experience it. That's important. And then the other thing that you don't get a lot from extracurriculars that we thought was just so essential for the co-curricular, it has to have a lot of opportunity for reflection. Big important sort of thing. So to go from the thing that I volunteer to do in my life, whether it be in a club, to go volunteer, to do podcasts because I like doing podcasts, or those sorts of things, to write for a magazine just because I like to write, fabulous, good, but now let's put a big dose of reflection on it. Let's make sure you're actually doing that thing that you're curious about, and let's make sure that we've got some people there help you reflect on what that's all about and what you've learned overall. And here's the beautiful thing about it too. You have a work product. You have something that you can point to, whether it be on a resume or a CV, to say, no, I've actually done this. I've got an experience producing podcasts around a certain subject matter. I know how to do it. I know how to do it from the standpoint of the technical, but I also know how to do it from the standpoint of the content and the editing and everything that goes into it. And I've thought real deeply about why I'm doing it and how that fits into my total education. And that's why you will see that we will give you Hub credit for doing that. And let me say one other thing about co-curriculars. We thought it was important too in this group that a student be able to, and we're gonna go back to this big important word, explore as a part of it. We thought that we've gotta find a mechanism for students to maybe try some of these co-curriculars and not penalize them for trying. And maybe it doesn't quite fit the same way that a class did, and give them a chance to explore a little bit too. So that was also a very, very important aspect. And we'll talk a little bit more about what we've done to make sure that they can explore.
So for clarification, because co-curriculars are another thing that's very, very new to students who are just starting out with the Hub. I've never heard of anything like that.
Good.
Never heard that word before.
That makes me happy.
Awesome.
So those co-curriculars in terms of Hub units are held in the same weight that a class would have. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, a Hub co-curricular can fulfill one Hub unit or one general education requirement. So they're about the equivalent roughly of sort of 2 credit hours of student effort. And so that could be, you know, approximately 90 hours, give or take, over the course of a semester.
But in the context of the Hub, is it equivalent to a class?
Well, that's a really interesting question. Right. And I think it's equivalent in the sense that it is another avenue through which students can fulfill a Hub requirement. But for our purposes, we've actually worked very hard, and it's actually been kind of a challenge, to distinguish Hub co-curriculars from courses. Because they're not intended to be a traditional classroom experience. And even some who are interested in supervising a Hub co-curricular experience might be drawing upon previous teaching experience or other kinds of experience that don't necessarily apply to a Hub co-curricular. There's actually a very kind of real way in which nobody has supervised a Hub co-curricular before, and we're all kind of learning how that should work. I mean, I think Dean Elmore kind of touched upon all the kind of key elements, you know, that you have, that it combines sort of activities and discussion and reflection. It fosters critical inquiry. They have a formal assessment process like courses. So in that sense, I think another way to draw a comparison would be to say that co-curriculars are being given a kind of similar weight in certain respects as a course, in that they can fulfill a general education unit, and then that they include a kind of significant final reflection kind of on the experience. That's very important to it as well. You know, I just want to kind of mention kind of two other other points, you know. And I think the first kind of gets back to what Dean Elmore said at the beginning, which is this idea of taking something that's extra curricular and adding kind of purpose or intentionality to it. That is a way that we've thought about it, and it's been, I think, helpful to us as a way to think about it. It's not to suggest that what has been happening in the extracurricular world is not purposeful
at
all.
Right.
It's merely to say, in a kind of in a specific way, for folks who might be already conducting certain kinds of activities, that if you can align them with hub learning outcomes, if you can be purposeful in that way, then they can be used to fulfill a general education requirement. And then, you know, the other thing I wanted to point out that's actually, I think, is really important about co-curriculars, and it's another way in which we've actually really tried to distinguish them from courses, is that they're ungraded experiences. They're zero credit ungraded experiences. And it's interesting, this was actually, you wouldn't necessarily think that it would take us that long to make that decision, but in fact it took quite a long time and a really productive conversation. Right. Originally these were imagined as being sort of pass-fail offerings, which made it feel a little more course-like, and which also felt, you know, as though, you know, are we gonna fail? You know, the question has been raised, can a student fail a co-curricular? I believe it was actually Dean Elmore who has raised that question a couple of times to sort of generate sort of conversation about it. And the hub's answer to that question after a lot of deliberation was no, that you can't fail a co-curricular experience. We didn't want these to be experiences that felt punitive to students or that discouraged exploration. We wanted to give it an ungraded designation so the students felt empowered to explore without fear of failure. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's just, you know, that was actually a really important decision for us to arrive at, because we felt that we wanted a grade designation that reflected the spirit of these. And we've tried to, you know, as you have the idea of developing a hub co-curricular experience that can fulfill a general education unit. And then as we begin to kind of move that through the university, we've had to be careful that it doesn't begin to look like a course.
Right.
And because there is, you know, still a significant time commitment involved and work involved, but it's in a very different way. And I think that in retrospect, for me anyway, is a decision that I feel was really important, and I feel like we landed in the right place, because I think that it's hopefully sending the message that this is different than a course. We actually want you to come into this with a different mindset. Mm-hmm. You're not here because you need to earn an A. You're here because we want you to have a particular kind of learning experience.
That's right.
And so that was really I think important. And the other thing, too, I would just add is that these appear on your transcript. And I think that's, that might make it feel more course-like, right? But what that also does is it gives these a kind of academic validation or weight. They're appearing on the transcript because they fulfill an education requirement for you. And so for students, the hope is that that will be attractive and appealing to them, because it's another way for students to sort of show the kind of work they're doing at a university that might not be the sort of traditional kind of work. And I don't think, and Dean Elmore, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think that it's common for co-curriculars to appear on transcripts.
No. And again, it gets back to, this is that total student learning, right? You see the total student learning in this thing we call a class, and then in these places we call co-curriculars or experiences. It's almost like this hybrid resume transcript. It's really cool.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, one way that I've been thinking about co-curriculars, and now I'm just sort of sharing some of my ideas with you about it, is that you kind of have the extracurricular on one side, and then on the other side you have the curricular, let's say what happens in the classroom. And in between those two is the co-curricular sort of place. And I think for both staff who might come from the extracurricular realm and faculty who might, you know, come from the curricular realm, for everybody, there's an adjustment in trying to understand what this sort of co-curricular middle ground is, where it's not a traditional kind of classroom experience. You might be in a classroom on certain occasions and having maybe particular kinds of discussions. On the other hand, it's not a sort of traditional sort of student affairs experience, because there's this very purposeful way in which you're having to meet specific kinds of learning outcomes, and there are requirements in terms of the reflection that you have to do. And so I've actually, Dina, well, I don't know if this makes sense to you or not, but I've begun to think that there's a way in which you sort of know you're there when no one is completely comfortable, because everybody is a little bit sort of outside of the place where they normally reside.
That's interesting. Yeah, that's right. Well, you know, you're talking also about a mindset on from the supervisor standpoint, and people who supervise, that's what we do. We supervise co-curriculars, and the folks who supervise them are typically going to be staff, although there's some faculty members who will do that too, but it's typically staff. And we've had to do this real big shift, as Eric said, staff have, but so have faculty about this. And in terms of aligning extracurriculars to be more co-curricular, aligning with the hub, that means that there's this mindset where, well, this is not a workshop, because I'm used to maybe doing a workshop. It's definitely not a class, and it's not totally the extracurricular, as Eric mentioned. And you know, things like that pass-fail, I know when talking to staff, that was a real big shift for them. Like, what do you mean? We're not going to grade it, right? And because we've gone through all of our life being assessed and having to answer questions for a grade, answer someone else's questions for a grade. I love that this says, no, you answer your own questions about what you've learned and you demonstrate it, and that will be the sort of thing that we will honor and celebrate and make sure that we show the world what you've done. So this is a real different way of learning here.
Yeah, and you know, Grace, you might find this interesting, but when we were thinking about that grade designation, we did talk to students about it.
We did.
And students were actually, they were interested in the pass-fail because they thought that students should be held accountable if they didn't do work.
They were real tough about holding students accountable.
And I think, you know, we listened to that, and then there was a way in which that actually further encouraged us to make this a non-graded experience, because we wanted to give students a chance to have an educational experience where they didn't have to adopt that mindset. And to just try to create an opportunity for that. I mean, I think that we have been trained to sort of think in that way. And so the hope was that it would just be, you know, that they would come to it with a different outlook.
So what I'm hearing is that with co-curriculars, it's more about having a personal responsibility than an academic responsibility to get this grade, right?
That's interesting. That's an interesting way to look at it. You would still have the academic responsibility to complete the hub curriculum and to earn those units in the path that works best for you, given your program of study. But you're right that it is it's really on the student to kind of see the experience through.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to be penalized necessarily for completing. At most, you might, if you withdraw from the experience at a late date, you might have, you know, that a W on your transcript, but you're not going to have but that's something that's understandable and common. That isn't necessarily a punitive thing. If, however, you know, that it's not like having an F.
Yeah.
So
or a P.
Or a P, right.
Well, you know, Grace, I love that. Well, the way you put it, that just sounds empowering to me. Really empowering.
Yeah.
That's cool. I like that. And we hope this is empowering. I think that's the real big piece of the hub. I urge students, and I urge faculty and staff, when they're creating these kinds of experiences, this has got to be about empowering. This is student empowerment at its best. And empowering minds to be able to make choices and to learn, really learn, do some deep learning, and to be able to integrate that. That's what this is about. So think empowerment when you do these.
So Eric, one last question for you and for you, Dean. Are we still in the throes of implementation with the hub? We've launched, but only 4 months in. Where do you hope to be, let's say, at the conclusion of this academic year in May, and where do we hope to be in a couple of years from now?
Do you mean in terms of just the hub curriculum broadly, or hub co-curricular specifically?
Hub co-curriculars specifically.
So I think that, you know, my hope is that by the end of May 2019, we'll have gone through our first sort of year, and we'll have kind of gotten things off of the ground. We're actually going to be, I think we have 8 co-curriculars scheduled to run this spring, there are more potentially that will run, which is great. That's actually fairly significant growth from this fall. And we have more co-curricular proposals that are coming through. We've had 23 proposals now, and many more that will be approved. So in the short term, I would expect that by fall of 2019, we will really be on the move, that things will really be growing. And if we've been able to offer, say, 15 to 20 co-curricular experiences to students with, say, maybe a total capacity of 250 to 300 seats, something like that for this year, I would expect that to probably double next year. We're seeing a good student in sort of levels of student interest in this. It's interesting because I don't actually think that a lot of students know about it. I'm learning that too.
I can confirm that. That's true.
Yeah, and I think that. I feel that we are developing a really strong kind of base of staff and supervisors who are interested in this and also who are kind of adopting the perspective that we're working together on this. You know, that this is something that we're feeling our way through. And there's going to be some kind of work to kind of make sure that we really have our sort of operations and systems in place next year, because really, within a couple of years, we're going to have a fairly large co-curricular program, and there are other things that we're going to be trying to bring on board, larger scale experiences, like, say, alternative service breaks, for example. And so in the big picture, 3 to 5 years, you know, I think the dream and the goal is to get to a place where we can offer any student who wants to have a co-curricular experience. And that means having, you know, upwards of 4,000 spaces available to students. I don't know that we know yet what the demand is going to be for these. But I will say that I think that early signs suggest, let's put it that way, early signs suggest that there's going to be a lot of interest in this from students. And I think part of that, and this is just sort of from some anecdotal conversations I've had, is that students are interested in having ways to earn hub units that aren't courses. And co-curriculars can...
That's a tagline right there, man.
No, when a student mentioned that to me, and I was like, I'm going to remember that.
Right.
No, these aren't courses. This is a different way for students to have an experience and to earn a hub unit. Mm-hmm. The other thing, too, the other way these can fit is that if you have a particular... Let's say you are interested in public health, for example, and there are different, you know, we have a number of opportunities right now, co-curricular experiences focused on public health, that might be really beneficial to a student in terms of gaining hands-on experience in that area. So, for example, one co-curricular hub, CC 101, which is put together by Wellness and Prevention Services, you essentially have an opportunity to work with the director of Wellness and Prevention Services here to explore the different health offerings that are made available to the BU community, and then to make a contribution to it, and to do all that through a public health lens.
And that is public health.
And that is public health and community health. And so I think on the one hand, it's going to create opportunities for students that are non-traditional and that aren't courses, and that, so you could look at it in terms of just fulfilling the hub curriculum, but you could also think about it in terms of what might be helpful to you in your future development, because these can be experiences that you can really talk about with future employers, for example, where you're going to have something at the end of this. That some sort of significant reflection or a project or an event that you might have created. It could be anything. I mean, there's a lot of flexibility in terms of how these are being put together. I think that all of these are ways that these could be appealing. I'm not certain, and Dean, I don't know, you may have a different sense. We want to be careful too that we are growing the right way. And by that I just mean that we have the staff who are interested, and we have the resources that we need, and that we're asking the right amount of folks, and we're giving students what they need, and we'll learn what that is.
Yeah, I co-sign everything Eric said, and just put that extra emphasis on the growth also has to be in staff mindset, and a sort of maturity around the hub
in the way that we're organized and the way that we propose and the new ideas that we have as well.
Well, that's a great segue to the conversation we will have next time, which really is around implementing co-curriculars, training staff, changing the culture so staff feel like they have the tools, the ability, and the self-confidence to supervise co-curricular experiences. Thank you, Eric. Thank you, Grace. Thank you, Dean Elmore.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And tune in next time for our podcast listeners.
To learn more about the BU Hub, check out the website, www.bu.edu/hub, or email to thehub@bu.edu. To reach Eric Jarvis, please email him at ejarvis@bu.edu. To reach Dean Elmore, please email him at kenmore@bu.edu. That is kennmore@bu.edu. Thank you.